Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings, y'all. It's another Wednesday evening, hump day. Time for another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 194. We are inching ever so closely to number 200, and we'll have champagne and cake and all kinds of cool stuff on the night that we hit number 200. This is your host, Beam Weeks, and with me is Mr. Stephen Gies. How you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing great. It's been beautiful down here in Alabama. Everything is in bloom. And this week, the tree frogs have been showing up around my deck, so I get to go out there and hang out in the evening with my frogs. So all is good. Everything good in Michigan?
Yeah, we had 70s all week long. Going back to Sunday, four straight days of 70-plus. Today, we had a tornado warning. Hail flying all over the place. The wind's picking up. Some swirling clouds. I don't think anything touched down, but, yeah, it was pretty cool. Sure sign that it's spring. And other than that, we're going back down, I think, to the 50s for the rest of the week, which at this time of the year, I'll take it.
Well, sounds like a hail of a time.
We
got some books out. Fresh Ink Group's been acting like a publisher lately. A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes, which is the first in her Bargainers series. And it's out there really doing well. Jan's been out on tour. She's from South Texas, but she's been Plato, Texas. I think that's toward the south.
Yeah.
But she's been out doing a tour in Missouri, book signings and appearances and this little song and dance and stuff like that, and doing very well. And she made the rookie mistake of not taking enough books with her because people are snapping them up, and now she's having to take a waiting list so that she can ship people their books after her tour is over. So, congratulations, Jan Sykes. A Beggar's Bargain is really moving out there. It's been doing very well on the Amazon rankings, and we're seeing some nice numbers. So, congratulations. A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes.
Yeah, congratulations. That's always a good sign there when you sell out. Also, just out is a book called A Light in the Darkness, and this is a book of poetry and words of encouragement. By Tina Reese. And Tina is a mentally handicapped individual. She attends my church, and I decided to help her out with this little project that she wanted to do. And she's geeked over this, over the hill, over the head over heels and all that good stuff. So A Light in the Darkness by Tina Reese, that is out and available at Amazon. Just an interesting little book of encouragement of letters and poems that she wrote for family, and good for her. If you would like to be part of tonight's show, last week we had a pretty good showing from the listeners calling in. We had, I think, like four callers and a bunch of people on Twitter. You can do that this week and line up your questions or comments that you have for tonight's guest, and here's how you can do all that good stuff.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
Yeah.
All right. We've got a couple of books that I've been working on recently with a couple of our authors. One is Angie Birmingham. She's a world-famous wildlife photographer who's based in Texas. She travels all over the place taking pictures, and she does consultation and training and workshops and things like that as well for other people to learn how to do what she does. We're working on her book called Journey Through the Lens, which is a how-to photography book, how to do nature photography, how to make the background blur, how to make things glow, how to make them look like they're moving, and all that kind of stuff. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Now, check today's newsletter, people, the newsletter that you got from Fresh Ink Group this morning, and you can see some pictures that Angie took this week down in Costa Rica. She's down there capturing bird photos to put in the last two chapters of this book. And we should have this book ready to come out in the next couple of weeks. Now, another one that I'm working on is my own grandson, 14-year-old Braden. And Braden's been going around taking pictures, drone shots, and various kinds of beauty shots of falling down buildings around North Alabama. And we're getting that book put together, too. And one of the fun things about Braden is he wants to be an ornithologist someday, so he's got me into birds. And I live on the lake down here where we have just a whole lot of birds, stuff like that. So it's been cool. I've got an app called Merlin now, and I turn that thing on, and it listens, and it tells me which birds are singing, shows me their pictures, and stuff like that. So it's been a lot of fun working on these and getting these two photographers together, learning more about birds, getting around, getting these pictures of buildings and working on these fun projects. So we try to have a good time, a freshening group. But do check out those pictures from Angie Birmingham in today's newsletter. That's going to be a good book.
See, what you need to do is get that Merlin 2.0, and when you click on that, when a bird's going, it'll say, that's a blue jay, and he's singing I Can't Quit You, Babe by Led Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Pandemonium in Puzzle Town, coming from B.A. Johnson. This is an illustrated chapter book about differences and acceptance for kids. B.A. Johnson has the sassy books. Isn't that right, Stephen?
Oh, yeah. She's got the two sassy books.
She got two sassy books. This is about the AME church, the history of it, as told through the eyes of Sassy, a child who attends that church. She's got Pandemonium and Puzzle Town coming out soon, so keep your eyes and ears peeled to the newsletter, and you can learn all about that.
Yeah, last time I peeled my ears, it didn't work out very well, so be cautious on that one, people. All right, we've got another one. Mr. President, I've got your back. The First Ladies of South Carolina State University. This is by Abigail H. Ugeni, who is the author of There Must Be Something in the Water that we put out a couple of years ago. And she's co-authoring this one with Mary L. Smalls, who's another former First Lady of South Carolina State University. So together they have put together what is a history book about all of the First Ladies going all the way back when this was South Carolina State College. It's full of cool pictures, background stories, the historical facts, and it's a celebration of success and people who have gone out there and done good things. So watch for that one, Mr. President. I've got your back. The First Ladies of South Carolina State University.
Yeah, and speaking of newsletters, we've got one. Are you subscribed? If not, here's how you can do just that.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Inquiry with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of FreshInkGroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What? Now, King's Ransom audiobook. I have an update. That is finished. Yeah, it seems like forever. Going way back, but it's finished. I will be uploading this. I have to grab a retail sample for Amazon, a little five-minute clip of that tomorrow, and then they're all going up into ACX, and that'll be available shortly thereafter. So keep your eyes and ears open for the King's Ransom audiobook of the Young Knight series by Cheryl Carpinello. And
who's your narrator?
That's what I was about ready to say. It's read by Ethan Drew. He's an actor and a voice artist and does a fantastic job. So go check out, was it Camp Hideaway?
That's
the movie he did last year with Christopher Lloyd from Taxi and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Doc Brown from Back to the Future. So if you want to check out what Ethan's all about. I'm guessing that movie's available on one of the streaming services by this point, so get over there and check it out.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a quick look at the top 25 print bestsellers from Fresh Ink Group. Now, these are print only. We're not looking at the digital versions, the e-books, the 212 retailers that we sell those through. We're just looking at print books that we sell to distributors right now. At number 25, we have David Carroll. Hardcover edition of I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, David Carroll's homemade social media blunders. That one's laugh out loud funny, some of the crazy stuff that people have posted over the years. And to answer the author's question, Retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate is in at number 24 with the hardcover edition of Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat, a 60-chapter memoir. And that's attracting a lot of attention, especially from the naval community and the military community. Next up, we got Robert G. Willis-Croft, who is a contributor to Jerry Pate's book. This one's Operation Whiteout, a Mac McDowell mission. It's one of four Mac McDowell missions, submarine thrillers, Cold War thrillers. And those are always perpetual bestsellers. Now, above that, we've got Kenneth Lindquist's Instructor's Edition for How to Teach Driving. Then above that, A.K. Wiggler's How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Georgia. She's also got Florida and Tennessee. Right now, Georgia's on the bestseller list. Above that, Robert McKenzie, the chair, Volume 1, Lightning, Thunder, and Glory. That's the one that Kathy Ireland is known to be endorsing and liking out there. He's got three more, Volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4, and we're working on number 5 right now to conclude the chair series. Above that, Larry Landgraf. This is the hardcover edition of his illustrated chapter book for children called The Adventures of Ali Orangutan, about an orangutan being shipped to a zoo, and he escapes, and hijinks ensue. Now, we've been talking about the Mac McDowell Mission series by Robert G. Willis-Croft. The first book in that series, Operation Ivy Bells, the Mac McDowell Mission, is next up on our bestseller list. Now, the next two on the list are the same book. The hardcover and the paperback are both selling exact equal numbers of The Rise and Fall of a Construction Giant, The History, People, and Stories of CFW Construction, and that's by Dick Ferrer, Jr. It's been 5 years since we put that book out. Dick says there's been a lot of new interest in it these past few weeks, so we're going to have to plan some events. Now, Dr. Helen Burrell's American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients in Pain. That's the paperback edition.
All right.
And now, Robert G. Willis-Croft, we've been republishing his Star Child books. He had a Star Child trilogy, and we're republishing them as the Star Child Saga and adding the Daedalus Files book in there as book two of that series. This is the Star Child Compact, a novel of interplanetary exploration, which is the Star Child Saga book three by Robert G. Willis-Croft. We just published that thing, what, about a week ago, Bean? Maybe two?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, yeah.
Great. So it's going well. Now, Dr. Janice D. Toney's Daddy Yo-Yo and the Legendary Marble Tournament. That's an illustrated chapter book for kids about bullying. And then we're back to I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, David Carroll's Homemade Social Media Blunders. Again, this is the paperback edition. Let's get up here in our top 10. Above that, Celebrate 98, The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football's Vols 1998 National Championship by Dave Hooker of Off the Hook Sports. That's a celebration of a 25-year-old college championship, college football championship. And even though college football season is over, that book is still out there moving steadily. So go Tennessee fans, go college football fans, and go Dave Hooker. Now, we got another David Carroll book here. Care to guess, Beam?
Hello, Chattanooga.
Hey, Hogan's. Hello, Chattanooga, Famous People Who Have Visited the Tennessee Valley by David Carroll. That's a look at more than 100 years of history of famous people who have visited the Chattanooga area and made a difference. And he's
a
got
really
pictures
cool book.
To prove it. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. All right, we've got Operation Ivy Bells again. Way up on the list, way up above the paperback edition, we've got the hardcover edition, Operation Ivy Bells and Mac McDowell Mission by Robert G. Willis-Croft. So, there's an example of a novel where the hardcover is outselling the softcover. Now, this is an interesting one. We have a book called, and let me see what number this is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This is number 8 on our top 25 print bestsellers this week, and it's a book called A Light in the Darkness, Words and Poems of Encouragement by Tina Reist. What's that book about, Bean?
That's poetry. That's words of encouragement. That's a light in the dark.
Yeah, all right, thanks. Kenneth Lindquist, How to Teach Driving Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, Instructor's Edition, Hardcover Edition, is way up here on our top 10. Now, this gets us to our top 6. And we've got one book that's in here twice. We got another book that's in here twice. In our top six, we've got two repeats. So let's start at number six. It's the paperback edition of Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon's The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip, paperback edition. That's a great memoir. If you're into country music, if you're into the supergroup Alabama, if you're into Mark Herndon, if you're just into good music history, this is a very important, poignant piece of it. And it's full of great stories, good behind-the-scenes information, and it's very heartfelt. So The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by Mark Herndon, paperback edition, is at number six. Number five, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Ork Chronicle by Robert G. Williscroft. That's the first of four in his Ork Chronicle series. The third and fourth, Ran and Keyed, we just put out not too long ago, too. So Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, people are going back and discovering the first book in the series, and that's a good way to do it. All right, we got our top four. Two and four are the same book, and it's A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes. The hardcover's at number four, and at number two is the paperback edition. That's our new novel, book one in the Bargainers series. Congratulations, Jan. That book tour you're out there doing in Missouri seems to be really stirring up some interest. That gets us down to the top three. We've already said what two is. Number three, the paperback edition of Celebrate 98, The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football Vols 1998 National Championship. So college football's in there at number three. Number two, A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes, and that gets us to what's our number one print bestseller this week? And it's from a Country Music Hall of Fame drummer named Mark Herndon. It's the hardcover edition, the collector's edition, the nice dust-jacketed version of his memoir, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip, in at number one this week. I suspect maybe there's some new attention on Mark Herndon out there since his wife, country music star Leah Seawright, just released a new single a couple of weeks ago called Black and Blue, and we're going to be talking about that in the show in the near future here. So congratulations, Mark Herndon. You got our number one slot this week.
All right. Now, listen, we know sometimes it's on a Wednesday night and you're not able to tune into the show. You might miss an episode here and there, or you just can't tune in. You're working on Wednesday nights, or your favorite TV show is on. So we got you covered. We've got an archive that's packed full of every episode we've done. So you just go over to these archives, click on the one you want to hear. If you got a favorite that you want to hear again and again and again, maybe it's one that you've been on. You want to listen to yourself talk about your book or your comic book or your album. Here's how you can find those past episodes in our archive.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
Fresh Ink Group presents, from author Stephen Gies, Been There, Noted That, Essays in Tribute to Life, Observations, Inspiration, Remembrance, and Noteworthies to Share. The simple lives of everyday people in a mundane world prove extraordinary in this collection of 54 personal experience essays by novelist Stephen Gies. The eclectic mix of memoir, commentary, humor, and appreciation covers a wide range of topics, each illustrated by artists and photographers from the Fresh Ink Group. Many of these essays have appeared in other book anthologies such as Chicken Soup, or in popular magazines, newspapers, websites, and the author's site, www.stephengees.com. Some appear in this collection for the first time. Some pieces may resonate in ways that touch you deeply. Others might well remind you of people you've known and loved. Some convey direct messages you might want to pass along, such as appreciation for friendship, birthday wishes, and graduation congratulations. Several explore remembrance, a way to share our search for meaning as we grieve. From cautionary tales to poignant pokes at our uniquely human foibles, Gies catches what many of us miss, then considers how we might all share the most poignant of lessons. Been There, Noted That aims to reveal who we are examine where we've been, and discover what we dare strive to become. Ben Nair noted that Essays in Tribute to Life is available worldwide in print editions and e-book editions, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Ben Nair noted that is proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group.
If you ever find yourself on the strange highway, don't turn around. Don't panic. Just keep going. You never know what you'll find. Could be an autistic young man conjuring magic with his fingers. Or one girl's afternoon leading to a lifetime of loss. Demon or angel. A winged man revealing his true nature. A mother's recognition bringing closure to her daughter. Sudden death of a teen boy stifling burgeoning secrets. Black man's guitar transforming one young boy. Decades-old accident bringing a desperate confession. Supernatural first love healing a broken family. Head on down the strange highway and see more stories unfold. Need a ride? This book will get you there. Catch an e-book or get on the bus with a nice print edition you can hold and keep, perhaps a full-sized trade paperback, or ride in style with your own dust-jacketed hardcover. Fresh Ink Group's got you covered. You can exit the strange highway and come back anytime you want. See, now you know the way in. Don't be a stranger.
Mm. All right. It was cool that Rod Serling did that before he passed away.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
What a great guy.
All right, so let's meet this week's guest, shall we? This
all
is
right.
An old friend of ours. Not that she's old, but she's a friend of ours, and the friendship is old. Excuse me. Marcia Fox is a prolific writer who has addressed... Great, now I'm going to cough. It's getting to be hay fever season down here with the pollen like crazy. Marcia Fox is a prolific writer who has addressed a wide variety of subjects. But one of her favorites is science fiction. It began as a love of astronomy, which eventually led to a Bachelor of Science degree in physics from Utah State University. This was followed by a 21-year career at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas, where she held a variety of positions, including technical writer, engineer, and eventually manager. Her NASA experiences included trips to Cape Canaveral in Florida, visiting other NASA centers in Mississippi, Alabama, and Maryland, as well as trips to the European Space Agency in the Netherlands. But the most memorable was the sad task of helping to recover space shuttle debris in East Texas following the tragic Columbia accident in 2003. Welcome to the show, Marcia.
Welcome, Marcia.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's good to be back.
All right. So last time we had you on, you were a denizen of Texas, and we understand you have moved since then?
Yes, I sure have. I put Texas in the rearview mirror, and I'm now in northwestern New York.
Wow.
All
what
right.
takes you there?
Pardon?
I say, what takes you to New York? That's a big change.
Yeah.
Well, be closer to family, and I had pretty well had it with the Texas heat. Where I lived in central Texas, the drought and the heat and the summers were, it was over 100 almost every day, got as high as 112. You couldn't do a garden, and it just was so demoralizing. I finally said that was enough. And I was in Texas for 35 years. I was there
wow.
longer than any other place I've lived, and I loved it in many ways, left family and friends behind, but I couldn't handle that heat anymore.
Wow, the blue bonnets are beautiful, but if you're melting while you're looking at them, that's no fun.
Well, the blue bonnets are this time of year or before, and that's the good time of year, and it used to be you could plant your garden in February and be harvesting tomatoes by the end of April. But then when they started messing with the weather and started giving them February freezes every year, then you didn't have any choice but to plant your garden later, and then it would go into that summer heat, and nothing would bear fruit.
Oh.
So it was too frustrating. It's like, no, I'm done.
Now, you're currently living with family, four generations, I'm understanding?
Well, three. Hopefully
three?
Not four anytime soon. Yeah, My youngest daughter and her family and I, we pooled our resources. We bought a big old farmhouse on close to 3 acres up here in the boonies, and it's been great. We've just had a good time. They pretty much have the upstairs, and I have a big old area of mine on the main floor with the living room and the kitchen and laundry room and such as that. But, yeah, we're very comfortable. And we love our property. We just are getting ready to put a greenhouse up, and we're just really enjoying it very, very much. It's so beautiful here, just absolutely beautiful.
You're going to love New York summers because it's just beautiful up there.
Well, that's when we got here. It was about a year ago.
All right.
So we got here last May, and so we saw the summer. And, of course, the winter was really long for us Texans, right?
Yeah.
But I just did remind myself of that summer heat and go, okay, snow's okay.
Snow melts.
Yeah,
yes,
snow melts.
Does.
All right.
Are
so
you
now that you're in New York and you lived in Texas, where all have you lived?
Well, I'm actually kind of gone full circle because I was born in New York, and I lived here till I was about 12, and then my parents moved to California, and I lived there for probably about 12 years or so, and then moved to Utah and was there for about 12 or 13 years, and then I moved to Texas, was there for 35 years, and now I'm kind of going full circle. Like I said, and I'm back in New York.
You traveled to Europe for work.
All three coasts, basically, I've worked or lived on.
You said you traveled to Europe for work. Did you spend much time in Europe?
Nah, just for work. I would have liked to have spent more time over there, but now I have a grandson over there in Poland, and he's just been writing a book on all the food additives and all the nasty chemicals that are in our food and cosmetics and the way they're trying to poison us, and he's in the process of getting that published, and he and his wife are expecting their first baby, and they'll probably eventually move back to the States. She's from over there, and believe it or not, it's the cutest story ever. They met on Instagram. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
Hey, well, there's a novel right there, the Instagram romance.
I'm telling you, and she's just adorable, and they're so happy, and she fit in with the family, and he fit in with her family, and it's just it really is novel material. It really is. It's adorable.
Wow.
Now, kind of refresh us on your education. Obviously, working at NASA, you've got to have some brains. You got a degree in physics.
I don't know. Not everybody at NASA has many brains, but no, I got a physics degree.
So what led you to physics?
I liked it.
Okay.
I'm a very weird person, right? Who likes physics? People say, oh, what's your degree? And then I tell them physics, and they look at me like I have an extra eyeball or something. But no, I always loved astronomy, even when I was a kid. I always wanted to be a science fiction author, and I also didn't want to look like an idiot writing about things I didn't know anything about. So I figured, well, if I want to write science fiction, I ought to get a physics degree, and I ought to get some experience in aerospace. And so all of that was kind of preparation for writing. Go figure. Nothing like being obsessive, right?
Yeah. Well, and you got a lot of experience as a contractor for NASA, too, that you can draw upon and use in your books as well. What kind of stuff were you doing for NASA? You had a safety contract?
Yeah, that was the contract I spent the most time on. I was on a life sciences contract for a little while, but I spent most of it on the safety contract. And we just made sure that things that went up, mainly I was with the payloads group, and we had to make sure that every experiment and payload that went up there wasn't going to take down the space shuttle. This was during the space shuttle period that I was there. Well, the space station had begun, but most of my work was with the shuttle. And, of course, they goofed a few times. And, of course, I know plenty of their dirty little secrets, because I was there when the Columbia went down, like you read in my biography, and was part of the investigation on that. And, of course, it was some real dirt in there, where it's all about management making decisions and mixing what the engineers tell them. It was the same thing with the Challenger. That
wow.
The engineers tell them, in fact, way back with before Challenger, the engineers told them with the design of the solid rocket boosters that they would lose one out of every 26 flights. And then, of course, they started doing, like they say, what is it, a lies, big lies in statistics or something like that. And
yeah.
When it got to management, they started fooling around with the statistics and said, oh, no, that's not what it is. Well, guess what it was? The engineers were right, and they crashed the Challenger. So anyway, it was similar with the Columbia, with what caused that, with a piece of foam breaking off the external tank and hitting the wing and breaking it so that all the plasma when they were landing went in there and the vehicle broke up. And the EPA, bless their little pea-picking hearts, had put out new regulations that mixed one of the components that they'd been using in the foam, and NASA could have gotten a waiver, but they wanted to be good little citizens, or whatever you want to call it, so they just tried to reformulate it without using this particular material, and they never get to work right, and pieces would fall off. And when you're moving at, you know, several hundred miles an hour, 1,000 miles an hour, or whatever, it doesn't matter how soft that foam is, it's going to do some serious damage. So anyway, yeah, politics in both cases were what crashed those vehicles.
Wow, and you actually was physically picking up parts after the disaster?
Yeah. I went out to the field out of a little town called Hemphill in East Texas and was out there for a couple of weeks. And we had smoke jumpers from New Mexico and Arizona, Native Americans, who were, they fought forest fires during the summer. And this was in the spring, and they didn't have any fires to fight. So they came out and they helped us to walk a grid pattern all along several hundred square miles along the path of where the Columbia broke up. And we would just walk this grid pattern covering many, many miles a day. And whenever we found something that looked suspicious, there were a couple people on a team from NASA, like myself, and we'd take a look at what they found and determine whether it was a piece of the shuttle or if it was just some other piece of, you know, trash or something someone threw out there. And we found some pretty interesting and some pretty heartrending things when we were out there picking things up.
Wow.
I can imagine. All right. We're going to take a break. We are talking to Marcia Fox, and we've got a caller, so we're going to take a break. We're going to do a couple of commercials, and when we come back, we will go to the phone line.
That's awesome.
A small rural community in the Lowcountry along Ocean Highway, Green Pine, South Carolina, has long lacked cultural and educational opportunities for its young people's future success. Many have gone on to serve in the highest levels of education, government, public service, elected office, business, and medicine. With so much success against the odds, surely there must be something in the water. Abigail Hugeni chronicles the impact just 42 of Green Pond's children have gone on to make in the world. All full-color editions include photos from around town and local translations of down-home sayings. These inspirational stories prove that, regardless of one's background, we can all find our own path toward greatness. An excellent reference, keepsake, gift, and addition to every library. There Must Be Something in the Water, anthology of the fourth generation, Descendants of Green Pond, After the Emancipation, is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Family secrets can be deadly. When Lisa visits her parents one fateful Saturday morning, she hugs her father and takes her suitcase to her childhood bedroom. The doorbell rings, and 1 minute later, her father lies dead on the floor, 3 bullets to the chest. The death of Eric Holmes sends shockwaves throughout the quiet neighborhood, but for the Holmes family, it's devastating. In this fast-paced psychological thriller, Lisa and her brother embark on a quest to solve the mystery of their father's murder. The journey takes them into a secret world where nothing is as it seems. Once the puzzle pieces begin to coalesce, they realize that their father had multiple lives. As the facts unravel, the siblings discover the true meaning of redemption. Gwen M. Plano's Redemption is available worldwide in softcover, jacketed hardcover, and all ebook formats. Published proudly by Fresh Ink Group. Redemption by Gwen M. Plano.
All right. Those books are available everywhere where you get your books. So get out there and grab a copy of each of those. Okay, so we're going to go. We have a caller on the phone right now. This is a Texas caller. Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from, and what's your name?
Hello, my name is Robert McKenzie.
Hey, Robert.
Bobby Mack.
Nice to hear the show, and I want to clarify a few things, and I'm going to ask the beautiful Marcia Fox a number of questions, if I may, because she's a true Texan, and she gets NASA, where I worked for 6.5 years, and the idea is, Gary, there are no denizens of Texas, okay?
Yeah.
First of all, we are all fighters of Texas, okay? I'm just letting you know, you want a Michigan title, don't get lazy. Beam, you're up there in Michigan. I hope you get some spring soon. But Miss Fox, here we go. Like three quick things. Unless Verain Wayho is on the line, Greenho, he's on the line, like talking about his writing style. I'm not a writer. I'm just a performer. So what I want to know from you, wonderful explanation. I would not have called in unless you explained the whole Columbia thing. One of my groomsmen is still the county attorney up there in Center Texas, and they had to send all these people out to find parts of the disaster. So anyway, that's great. I'm not a scientific guy, and you'll know this, Marcia. I did 533s. I had to add up all these contractors. You know, we want to get paid. So how do you get paid? You got to turn in your timesheet. Well, when do you turn in your timesheet? On time. So everybody thinks I'm this big dude from the chair, very old, only a few others. But anyway, I love what you said about that whole thing, because that thing was coming down. They knew it was doomed, I don't know, over Japan or when it – They lost radio contact. And I got another Challenger story, which is even sadly more terrible. So I just wanted to ask you a couple more questions. What is your favorite character you've ever written about? What is your favorite book? And I'm telling you another thing about when I ask about these questions, it's not to like, the standard pap. Because you worked at NASA. Gene Kranz was a friend of mine, as was Fred Hayes from the Doom 13. I was on NASA, JSC, ISC, the Information Services Contract, with all these IT people wandering around. What's going on? Where's the feed? And this and that. It's mission critical stuff. So anyway, I love what you said. And I hope you can give me an appropriate answer. And Gary does not cancel the chair, Volume 5.
All right, so we're at what's your favorite character that you've written and what's your favorite book?
Okay, is that of my work or of somebody else's?
Whatever you want to answer.
Whatever I want to answer. I've written so many, and it generally is whatever I'm writing at the time. I absolutely feel like all my characters are family. I think one of my favorite ones, and Stephen will remember this one, Thyron, my telepathic walking plant from
my favorite.
You helped edit that. You did such a good job.
And I want to party with that dude someday.
Oh, I know. I had so much fun writing that book. I mean, getting into the head of a telepathic walking plant who is then captured on Earth and held as a prisoner at Area 51. And a NASA astrobiologist is trying to figure out what he's got there, and they form a bond, and oh my gosh, I had so much fun writing that book. So in many ways, it's definitely one of my favorites. But then my more recent series, the Dead Horse Canyon series that I wrote with my Cheyenne Indian co-author, Pete Risingson, I absolutely loved that and the characters in that. And we're in the process of getting serious about writing the third book. And I'm really looking forward to it because, and probably only another author can understand this without thinking that you don't have all of your buttons, but I miss my characters. They're like family, and I miss interacting with them. And so that's kind
of... until they want to borrow money.
Well, the characters don't do that too much. And,
I only need a place to crash for a couple of nights, Marcia.
Well, they can crash right at my computer. There's plenty of room right there.
There you go.
Yeah. No, that's pretty much it. I just have an affinity for all my characters because you figure any character you write is actually a part of yourself.
Yeah,
even if
it is.
To be able to get into their head, it's part of you.
One of the first things you said when answering this I thought was especially poignant. It's whatever character you're working on right now.
Yeah.
That's the one that you're spending the time and energy and getting to know and helping flesh out, and that person's introducing himself or herself to you as well. So, you got to have some affection for them.
And then the first time that they go off and do something spontaneous that you hadn't unplanned them doing, you know that you have a real character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As soon as they do something and you're going, whoa, what are you thinking? But it's like, no, they are thinking. They have assumed their persona, and they're going to tell you what the story is going to do.
Even a telepathic walking plant. All right, well, Robert asked about your favorite book.
Robert asked a lot of questions.
I know. Golly, of the ones I've written, again, it's the one I'm writing at the time. If I had to pick one, it would
come on. Give me some so I can buy it. I'll buy it, ladies. The hardcover dust jacket commemorative thing.
Well, the only hardcover I have is my astrology book, and that would probably make your eyes glaze over. I would recommend
not
the
really.
Canyon.
ask Beam and Gary about my space thing with Mintaka, Alnilam, and Alnitak, Volume 5.
Yeah. Well, now you're recommending your Dead Horse Canyon series. What is the status of that? You've got two books out?
I have two books out, and each of those books have gained 5 awards each.
Wow.
And they were not easy to write. They're so complex. And my co-author was so amazing because he really was driving the train there for the Native American character. And we worked together so well that I took care of most of the other characters, and he just told me what Charlie, the Native American character, would be doing. Covered lots of cultural things about their practices and their religion, and learned so much about them. And it's a good story. It's one of those that I kind of, when they say sometimes you amaze even yourself, I look at that book that Pete and I did, and I'm amazed that we were able to do what we did. And it's kind of intimidating.
So what's it called? I will buy it. Let me know.
It's the curse of Dead Horse Canyon.
Oh. Is it like Arizona or New Mexico or Northern Texas or something? Or
Where is Dead Horse Canyon?
It mostly takes place in Colorado. And then the book two is mostly
Colorado.
It's kind of a long story. I was originally
going
to
read about it, so don't worry. I like you on your thing. I get the email every Wednesday morning, and they go, oh, yeah, and I had to force my way onto the email. Robert McKenzie, there's a video. But the thing is, I want to read about other people, and I'm buying books of people I like, and I liked what you had to say because you were from NASA, and that's a grind. No one knows how hard it is, how hard it was to get to the moon, to do the space shuttle, to do the International Space Station, and go to Mars. And, like, all these people, it's crazy.
Well, or what about the ones that say we didn't go to the moon? Or
I punch them in the face every day in Houston. I punch them in the face.
Oh, no kidding.
I'm like,
I mean,
it's
so kind of
like the, like
Buzz Aldrin punching
Charlton
that guy.
Heston in the movie Soylent Green. And I punching people in the face.
Yeah.
And then cooking
them
for dinner.
Yeah.
No, I don't cook them for dinner, Beam, because you're up there. Beam's always talking about the weather. Oh, it's going to be cold, and then it's hot, and then it's not, and he cuts his grass. I'm going to tell you something all about this Marcia, because I'm going to ask you about how you spelled your name. Beam and Gary are the greatest publisher people in the history of the world. I don't care about Max Perkins or any of these other guys. These guys put up with me for now 5 years and not going to talk about my stuff, but I'm just telling you, this is the publisher you chose. So I hope everything's going good for you, and I love you, and I like what you just said, because the Morton Fire call, oh, let's choose a contractor from Utah. Shut up. The thing with the shuttle, you know the whole thing. When you said political, bing, that's when I called in.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is, talking of Utah and the solid rocket boosters, you're probably familiar then with Roger Beaujolais, who was a employee of Martin Picol, and he tried to warn them because, if nothing else, being in Utah, they knew what cold weather did to those O-rings.
Yeah.
And when the Challenger blew up, Beaujolais basically had a nervous breakdown because he felt so devastated that no one listened to him. And
exactly.
Yeah, I have books and
I don't say exactly much, but I don't know you, Marcia. I want to know your first name. You're spelling your name
Marcia.
That way. But the thing is, thank you so much. I'm going to get off the line and let the show continue.
Okay, well, it's been fun talking to
Gary's
you.
Gary's getting
you
really mad.
Yeah, thanks
we'll
for calling
do Emerson,
in, Robert.
Lake, and Palmer another time. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling, Bobby Mack.
Thank you, Marcia. You're doing the right thing. I'm going to buy you all your books.
It's Marcia.
Oh, thank you. I'll love
Marcia,
you
Marcia, Marcia,
Marcia. Marcia, Marcia,
Marcia. Marcia, Marcia. It's a Beam school, but he's not quite there with the whole book thing. So you're like calling, and he says, "Oh, you got to talk to Gary." So it's going.
Yeah.
Love the people.
All right.
You're
going to
publish my book, Gary?
Say that again.
You going to still publish my volume 5?
Yeah, we'll see how you act.
Making sure. I'm not calling it ever again. So this is a great woman, of strength. And like someone I should have written about in a chair, about the 22 women of greatness, the mother of all women coming of age. And everybody made something happen. But Marcia, thanks so much. And the thing with NASA, I'm still here in Houston. I'm not a Denison. I'm like a deep, deep, deep dive guy in Houston. I know when to come up with a hurricane.
All right. Again, Robert, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for calling in.
We'll talk to you next time.
No, I don't know if you ever really did.
Yeah.
But thank you for taking the call.
All right.
That all reminds me, there's a clip you can find on YouTube where Buzz Aldrin and his wife went out to dinner, and this guy kept getting in his face with a microphone and a camera, accusing him of faking the moon landing and how that was all fake and stuff. And Buzz Aldrin keeps trying to get away from the guy. And finally, the guy, like, turns and says something foul to Buzz Aldrin's wife, and Buzz Aldrin lays him out. Lays him out. I mean, one hard punch to the face and just puts him down. That's kind of fun to watch, but then again, you know, hey, you got to be a violent person, right?
Right. right? Well, so, sometimes that's the best answer. I'm sorry. I'm an old schooler.
I hear you. Yeah,
so
Marcy,
second here. Over on Twitter, throw these out here. Verwayne Greenhoe, he got in here and said, LOL, thanks for the shout-out, Robert McKenzie. I appreciate it. And before we took the call, Bobby Mack there said, the greatness of Stephen Jays and Bean Weeks cannot be understated. You know what? I'll take that. Verwayne said agreed to that. Yeah, we were taking bets. Is that bourbon or tequila tonight?
Yeah, and
maybe
I think
sure
Alabama.
That's true. I can't get my favorite tequila up here. That's kind of annoying.
Yes, and I'm down here in Alabama where the mixed drink is Tequila Mockingbird.
Tequila Mockingbird.
That's good.
So, Marcia, we had an eclipse last week. Word on the street is that you have a certain amount of interest in eclipses and maybe a thing or two to say about them.
One thing, it was supposed to go over us, and it was too cloudy and didn't see a thing, and that was kind of annoying. All that hype and everything, and then not seeing anything but a bunch of clouds, and where we were several hundred people, and they were all bummed out. And so, anyway. But, yeah, no, somewhere along the line, I got interested in astrology, and it was mainly because I'm a rebel, and when I was in college, they told me that it didn't work, and I thought, okay, I'm going to see if it does or not. And when I investigated it, I found out they lied. It worked really well. You just had to get into it a little bit. And so I always dabbled with it for several years, and then when I was getting ready to retire, I actually went to the International Academy of Astrology, an online school, and went through their program, which was pretty much the equivalent of another bachelor's degree, what they put you through, and qualified me to be a professional astrologer. And the more I got into it, the more it fascinated me. It is so amazing what it does. So anyway, with all these eclipses coming across the United States and knowing a little bit about them, the eclipse path of visibility is important. And the one that we had in 2017 that went across the United States, basically I think from around South Carolina clear up to the Oregon area, and I saw that one, at least I saw that one, in a little town called Swan Valley, Idaho. And the prognostication for a eclipse path that crosses a country like that is that the country will be divided. Think about 2017, the year after Trump was elected. What happened? Everything started to fall apart, and it hasn't done too well since. And so then in 2023, last October, there was another eclipse, and that path went over Texas and on up towards the northwest part of the country. And then we had the one this April 8th, and it went from the Texas area up across over us in New York and then up through the northeast and parts of Canada and stuff like that. So now we have two X's across the United States from these eclipse paths, and it's just not good. When you look at what's going on with the country and all of the unrest and the whole world is kind of a hot mess. And so it just got me interested in looking deeper at the significance of these eclipses, where you really get into the astrology and the deep meaning of the planets and their placement and the way they interact with each other and what they mean. And it was pretty startling what I came to discover from them. I hadn't really examined eclipses super close to that degree before, but everything has a birth chart. And when you're looking at how astrology is affecting the United States, its birth chart, as you would expect, is July 4th, 1776. And you use that information, and then you run the eclipse information with them. And when you know how to interpret the symbolism of all the planets and a lot of the asteroids and all this other stuff, things start coming out. That it was real obvious. There was a eclipse in September 2016 that when I was looking at that, it said essentially that there would be a huge directional change, and this was before the 2016 elections. And it was obvious to me that Trump was going to win and not Hillary. Then in December 2019, that eclipse hinted very strongly at COVID. It lit up Fauci's chart like a Christmas tree. And that was, I actually have that in my book about what it did to him. And then, of course, the path of visibility for the June 20th, 21 eclipse was really close to Wuhan. So it just, these things, you can't make it up. It's beyond coincidence. There's just the odds or the probability of these things being a coincidence is just nonsense. It couldn't possibly be. So then we had there was a lunar eclipse on March 25th, right before the one on April 8th, that they come in pairs. There's usually two solar eclipses and two lunar eclipses a year. Sometimes there's more, but that's the average. But most of them don't go over here, so we're not aware of them. They can be anywhere in the world. But anyway, when I looked at that one, and it hadn't occurred yet, and in my book, I mentioned, you know, some of the things that were involved, and I said that there was probably going to be a transformational event that affected the populace and related to other countries, and that there also appeared to be faded injuries related to infrastructure in some way in our relationship with another country. Well, the day after that eclipse, what happened? The Baltimore Bridge fell. And I started looking into that. And there it was, all over the place. And since then, I've discovered how you can kind of nail down where these things will happen, which I'm really having a lot of fun with now, is just looking at where the hot spots are and what to look for. And interesting enough, one of those hot spots for something to happen over the next several months is Houston. It was kind of had a crosshairs on it. And so anyway, and there was definitely a hot spot there in the Chesapeake Bay area from the March one. So anyway, it's just fascinating and kind of sucks you in because there's always something new to learn, and I have several friends that are astrologers, and of course we really get into it and everything. But it's just mind-blowing.
So what's the name of your book, and what else can we find in the book?
Okay, well, the name of it is The Dark Side of Eclipses. Do the Heavens Still Issue Warnings of Things to Come? And it starts pretty much around the turn of the millennium. It starts with like 2000. And then it just goes through several eclipses. Mainly I skipped ahead to like that September 2016 one because I thought, oh, there's just too many of them and the book would have been 1,000 pages and I never would have gotten it written on time. I thought it was going to be about a 50-page book. I was just going to kind of talk about the ones that crossed the United States and call it good. And then when I got into it, there was so much more to the story that the book wound up to be over 300 pages long. But I start with the September 2016 and then pretty much do most of them up until the ones that we have just had, and then went over some of the other things that have been significant on the astrological side. But what's really interesting is like the crosshairs of the eclipse paths. Like I say, there's two X's. One X is over southern Illinois, right over a little town called Carbondale, and that's also where the New Madrid Fault is. And I started researching the New Madrid Fault, and back in 1812, they had this massive earthquake, and you may have heard of it. It's the one that caused the Mississippi River to run backwards.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, if that really happened. And
yeah, I saw a documentary on that.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that was in 1812. There was an eclipse before it, and there was also a comet at that time, and that same comet is back. It's out there right now. So that's kind of creepy. So I don't know if something's going to blow with the New Madrid Fault, but I have a bunch of information about that in the book where I researched it, and the way they're just waiting for a big one to pop in that locale. And then the other X is pretty much southwestern Texas. And with all that's going on with the illegal immigration and the crisis that that has created, it's not too surprising that that's a hot spot. And there's no telling what's going to go on down there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, another reason I left Texas. I thought, this is going good. I think I'll leave.
So tell us the name of the book again.
It's The Dark Side of Eclipses.
And that's by Marcia Fox.
Yes, and it's in hardcover, softcover, and Kindle on Amazon.
All right. So we're going to roll a couple of commercials here and come back and wrap up talking with author Marcia Fox. And it's not too late to call in, people, 516-453-9902.
Lucifer loses his day job, so he starts his own gig. A little girl's tantrum destroys her toys, but will they lash out in revenge? Can a miserable housewife find a new life for herself in a tear-stained old painting? Eerie charms of the short story, fantasy, mystery, and horror includes a snake deciding the fate of the world, a slot machine choosing life's winners and losers, a malevolent fairy dancing men to their deaths, a couple desperate to escape a train station, the dog show judge facing death, and more great tales. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Eerie Charms is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Patricia A. Guthrie offers a cauldron of eerie delights that will please, delight, and yet terrify you.
Phil Lippert was thrown into the bowels of the Michigan Department of Corrections as a 17-year-old adolescent. He remained entrenched in a world of malfeasance for the next 40 years. With astonishing honesty, he reveals the raw details of what a life of incarceration looks like from the inside. His observations of human behavior and his stellar ability to tell a story reveal the courage and resilience of a man who has survived horrifying and savage injustice. Sometimes tragic, but often humorous and redemptive, Crimes and the People Who Commit Them offers a poignant collection of stories and miscreants and corrupt institutions, tales of men who have made poor choices and suffered grave consequences. Through it all, Phil Lippert displays a sly sense of humor and the quiet wisdom of a man who is, ultimately, a survivor. Lippert's journey has been one of an unrequited longing for freedom. Crimes and the People Who Commit Them is proudly published in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats, available worldwide.
Our mistakes do not define us. All of our experiences and challenges, especially the most painful, serve a greater purpose. A lifelong journey of profound experiences and personal sacrifices led Judy White Arts to discover her destiny and connect with her true, authentic self. Judy shares her story and divine pearls of wisdom in this memoir that is equal parts inspiration, insight, and self-help. The essence of spiritual awakening, enlightenment, inspiration, and insights that illuminate the path to divinely guided wisdom is beautifully illustrated with full-color photos and a journal in the back for recording your personal thoughts. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Judy's book is available in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Discover your true authentic self through the essence of spiritual awakening as you journey toward your path to self-enlightenment.
All right, we are talking live with Marcia Fox. And Marcia, you've got other books as well. So we're going to knock out a few of these, the science fiction books and whatnot. Beyond the Hidden Sky, what's this about?
Well, that is the first book in my Star Trails tetralogy. That's the first book of the series, and the one we mentioned earlier with the telepathic walking plant. He's a character in that series, and then he got his own book as the fifth book. So he was the last book in that series. So that is where it starts. It's about a family that is basically immigrating from one planet to another, and it's a real kind of Wild West type planet that they're going to, and there's all kinds of political intrigue going on and that sort of thing. And the family gets separated through all sorts of problems they encounter along the way, and a large part of it is their teenage daughter gets separated and kind of blown off in a sort of a Star Wars type of way in an escape pod, and then they're trying to find her, and it gets pretty detailed into the politics of the world and the bad guys that are trying to take it over, and that type of intrigue thing, and the family dynamics where she has a brother, she doesn't get along with a brother, and all that kind of drama that makes it kind of a family friendly series with quite a bit of science in it. In fact, I've had, I guess, some reviews or something where people said it had too much science in it. And it's like, well, you know, one of the things that got me interested in physics was reading science fiction when I was a youngster and thinking how cool it was and wanting to learn more. And I was always kind of disappointed in the stories because they never really went into any of that. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to go into it a little bit, not to the point where people are bored out of their mind or don't understand it, but try and introduce those upcoming nerds what's out there.
Well,
and
yeah.
Then, of course, expand upon it. And since I started writing those 10 years ago, a lot of the things that were science fiction when I wrote it are now science fact. So that's kind of weird.
Now, you mentioned introducing your telepathic plant. That's by book 5, The Terra Debacle, Prisoners at Area 51. That's featuring him?
Yes. That he was in the whole, he started into the story in book 1. And he just turned into such a character, and I had so many people say he was their favorite character. And he just deserved his own story. And there was a time when the girl protagonist, Krina, is on Earth for a while, and Siron and the robot, Aggie, were taken off to Area 51, but they just kind of dropped off of the radar in the series. And I thought, there's a story there of what happened when they were at Area 51. And then when I completed the 4 main books of the tetralogy, I just thought, okay, now it's time to write what happened to Siron and Aggie when they were at Area 51. And it turned out to be the most fun book of all of them because I put plenty of humor in that one. And a lot of the other books don't really have much humor in them. And this one, the funny little relationship between him and the scientist, I just had so much fun with that.
Yeah, great character and a lot of fun.
We do have another caller, so we'll grab that before we run out of time here. I believe this is from the armpit of Florida. Hello, Mr. Verwayne Greenhall.
Good evening.
Hi, Verwayne.
I thought I'd call in and try to get my name mentioned one more time on air.
I don't know. Did what Mackenzie call you count?
And then there's the names my wife calls me, but I can't say those on your radio program. So
sure you can. We have no rules.
Actually, you can.
Yeah. So
Yes. Do you do many audio books, Marcia?
The whole science fiction series, all 5 books, are in audiobooks.
Oh, the tetralogy. Okay.
Yeah.
Finding a bigger and bigger market for those. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they were made into audiobooks a few years ago. The same person did all of them. So there's good continuity that way. And with that many books, if anyone were taking a road trip, boy, they'd have plenty of material for the whole road trip.
All right.
I just wanted to say hello.
Okay. Well, everybody, we're glad you called in. And, always good to hear from you.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Our guest this week has been scientist, author, raconteur, Marcia Fox, previous denizen of Texas, now living in upstate New York. It's been fun having you on, Marshall. Marcia? Marshall.
Marshall.
It's been having fun having you on, Marcia. How do people find you, follow you, contact you, threaten you, stop by to borrow money?
Well, that's why I moved to the boonies, so they couldn't find me. But I'm online all over the place. I have so many websites. It's just mind-boggling trying to keep them up. Both of the Star Trail Tetralogy has its own website. The Dead Horse Canyon books have their own website. I have my Facebook page, my author Facebook page. They're out there on Twitter. I don't get on Twitter quite so much as I used to. And same with Instagram. It seems like when I moved, my whole routine got kind of upended, and with getting settled and everything, I got out of the habit of being on social media a whole lot. So if people want to get a hold of me, they need to email me. That's one thing I check every single day is my email, and you had them listed in the email that you sent out. Because people will message me on Facebook, and it'll be months before I find it, and then I feel bad that I just don't check it that often. So, that's fun.
And as always, like all of our Fresh Ink Group authors and all of our guests here on the Voice of Indie podcast, if you want to get a message to somebody, we've got a contact form at freshinkgroup.com. Just send us a note, and we'll make sure we pass it along. And Marcia, most of your stuff that's out there, when people are looking, it's under the name Marcia Fox, right?
Yes. Yes, okay. I have not used the pseudonym.
All right, and people note that it's M-A-R-C-H-A, which is kind of cool. It's a little bit of a unique spelling, which makes it easier to find Marcia Fox and identify that you've got the right person. So get out there and discover all these great books by Marcia Fox. Marcia, thanks again for being on. And Beam, who's going to be our lucky guest next week?
Next week it's going to be all the way from the west coast of Canada, from British Columbia, A.G. Fletcher. He's been on a time or two before, I believe two other times, and he's got a new book coming out, so we're going to bring him in and let him talk about his new book, A.G. Fletcher.
And then after that, we've got Sue Coletta, who is a prolific author, very popular, and she's also a contributor to Story Empire, storyempire.com, which everybody needs to be checking out. That's Sue Coletta.
And then after that, we're going down south, and I mean way down south to Brazil, South America. Mike Deodato, he is a pretty well-known comic book artist. During the 90s, he worked on like Wonder Woman and Hulk and all those for Marvel. He did DC Comics, and he had a family, and he stepped back from it for a while, and now he's back with some new stuff, and we're going to get to know Mike Deodato. So if you know somebody that's a big fan of comic books going way back, have them tune in. And after that,
we've got an author that I'm not familiar with yet. I'm looking forward to learning more about him and his work. It's Michael Patrick Rogers. So if you're a fan of Michael Patrick Rogers, make sure you check out this podcast. If you're not, check it out anyway.
And after that, an author we are familiar with is bringing along a friend. Abigail H. Hugini is going to make her return visit to the show, and she's bringing along Marielle Smalls. They've got a new book coming out, so tune in for that. And after that, it's another one we don't know.
Yeah, we're into June by then, and that's going to be Colleen M. Story. She's a prolific author. I keep seeing her over in social media. She's been supportive of our show. And we're looking forward to having her. So that's Colleen M. Story.
She's actually the last of May. May's got 5 weeks in it. She's the last. I haven't booked anybody for June yet. But
right on the line. All right.
She will be right there.
Again, Marcia Fox, M-A-R-C-H-A, has been our guest. Get out there and check out her science fiction. Check out her fun books. And she's got astrology and now a book about eclipses. So thanks again for being on the show, Marcia.
Oh, well, thank you, Marcia, for having me.
Always fun to have you here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
All right. We'll see everybody next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Voice of Indie.
You've been a part of Voice of Indie, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word. Support our guests. Then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag #FreshInkGroup.